Hello, my name is Paul Green, chairman of the City Club of Chicago and WGN political analyst. Today at the City Club, we had a discussion on the crisis in confidence in Chicago, its police department, its schools, its finances, and the mayor's ability to lead. The reporter from the Chicago Sun-Times dealt with this issue were Dan Milopoulos, Mary Mitchell, and Fran Spielman. They all agree that Mayor Emanuel has been wounded both politically and governmentally, and they think the problems that are so great that it will take all of his energy to once again assume the power he had before the crisis with the police department.
Hi, everybody. Shortly after Mayor Emanuel was elected, I think I did a panel here at the City Club, and I mentioned that I thought that Chicago was lucky to have someone of his talents and his contacts at this unique time in our history because the problems were unbelievable. The mayor sold himself rightfully as someone with clout at the very highest levels of government. But now, when Chicago needs that clout most, his clout has been very greatly diminished by the Laquan McDonald scandal. He's willing to spend political capital to tackle our most difficult problems, but he has a lot less political capital to spend. And if you want to know how, well, look at the last campaign before the Illinois primary. He was a combination pinata and pariah. He was avoided by his friends. He was attacked by his enemies, and it was kind of a tough thing to watch. What's kind of amazing about the McDonald scandal to me is how often the mayor's political instincts have failed him along the way. This is a guy who engineered the 2006 takeover of the U.S. House, who had this reputation of being this brilliant political operative, and yet when it came time to trusting his own instincts as mayor of Chicago, he chose wrong several times. In the case of the McDonald video, if you have bad news, get it out there yourself and get it out there quickly. He did not do that. He defended a police superintendent he ultimately fired. He defended IPRA when he then made a change there. He resisted the Justice Department investigation, called it, I can't remember what the word was. He said it was misguided and then had to backtrack on that. He said that the law department didn't need to be investigated before calling Dan Webb in. He didn't apologize for the whole horrible episode until black aldermen publicly demanded it. So at every step of the way, he seemed to have made the wrong move. And Mayor Daley, for all his faults, had instincts that he, better instincts than that. And Mayor Emanuel has not. And that has been very surprising to me. The most damaging scandals, obviously, are the ones that reinforce what you already think about a person. And we can see that in Hillary Clinton when people think she's devious or not telling the truth and so on. And the email thing kind of underscores that. In Emanuel's case, he's always the guy manipulating his image, controlling everything behind the scenes. And so it becomes very difficult for people to even believe that he didn't hold that video until after the election. Whether he did or he didn't, no one believes that he didn't. It's hard for me to imagine that African-American voters, and Mary will have more to say about this, I'm sure, but will give him a third chance. They already gave him, they elected him the first time, they reelected him the second time, even though he closed the 50 schools. He had to spend $24 million to do that. I doubt very sincerely whether they're going to give him a third chance. In the case of the Eddie Johnson thing, the mayor, you know, turned the process on its ear, decided that the police board's nominees were not good enough. He rejected, he actually chose Johnson and offered him the job before he even followed the law and rejected those names. He may have won the news cycle, as he likes to put it, by choosing someone wisely in Johnson, who may well be someone who could boost the morale, who can get a handle on this rising crime, who can build bridges to the community that have been burned. But he also did some damage, as Mary wrote so well in her column, about in rejecting the police board, because he's trying to reestablish credibility in the police board. And in Lori Lightfoot, who also is the task force on police accountability chairman, who is going to be coming out with some recommendations. So in doing this end run, there was some damage done. To be powerful, leaders need to be admired and feared. And I don't believe that Mayor Emanuel is either admired or feared now in the wake of what happened. The aldermen are pushing back, partly to save their own necks, because they were also criticized for not asking enough questions. And it's going to be a tough go. The friendship with Governor Rauner, which looked so promising early on that it was almost scary, has been a disaster, of course, not the mayor's fault. But the state is at an absolute stalemate. Chicago has so many needs and is getting nothing. It's hard to imagine what the schools are going to do to make this $676 million pension payment for the teachers. They probably are going to have to borrow more money, again, at higher interest rates, and then they run up against the idea that the state has a cap of 9%. They already borrowed at 8.5% the last time around, and it's hard to imagine that they're going to be able to do that. Will they get a deal with the teachers' union? Who knows? Will there be another strike? And if so, when? I mean, the one-day strike that we've already had doesn't bode well for that. As I wrote today, the police and fire pension bill that will give the city 15 more years to ramp up to full funding is on the governor's desk now. The clock is ticking with the 60 days. Hopefully, he'll sign that for the city because it means hundreds of millions of dollars. If not, then the mayor's going to have to raise taxes again. For the schools, he might be forced to take matters into his own hands and push through the $170 million property tax increase for teacher pensions that he has already offered. And as far as the municipal and laborers' pension funds, which those reforms were overturned by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court gave the mayor a very narrow window to try to squeeze through by negotiating some changes in exchange for future benefits with the unions that would be accepted, but it's hard to imagine that is going to produce the kinds of reforms and the money that he was counting on. The bottom line is that the mayor will be judged on how he does with the finances and how he does with the policing issues, and I believe that both issues will linger long after he's mayor. I think that I don't think you will see Mayor Rahm Emanuel's name on the ballot again in Chicago. I think if he had been, I'm just saying that I frankly don't think that he had intended to run more than two terms anyway. Now the decision, I think, will be made for him, both because of the damage that's already been done to his reputation and also because of the very painful solutions that he'll have to push through if he's going to address these problems. If his name had been on the ballot with Anita Alvarez, I believe he would have faced the same fate.
We got the clap.
Anyway, that's my assessment.
Very good. Round of applause. Is that Guy Montgomery here? Oh, we have a new clapper. Okay, the professional union clapper. Mary, you're up.
Okay, so when I think about this issue of leadership and the mayor, I think about the fact that all leaders have to lead from a platform. We would hope that their platform is one of based on morality, that they have a clear mission in sight, and that they have the best interests of the city when they make their decisions. The problem here with Mayor Emanuel at this point, of course, is that he's lost that foundation, that he's now like on sinking sand, and it's very difficult to rebuild on that foundation at this point. I like to look at the mayor and say, okay, he started off with this powerful image of being able to solve problems. And to be fair, and I want to be fair here, I think that the problems that we face now as a city is much different than even 8 years ago. There was a time when it was, you know, we expected government to pick up our garbage and make sure that they control the rats. We want to make sure our schools are open and our kids are getting educated. We want to make sure that the crime was low. Now we want all kinds of things from government. We don't just want our streets to be clean. We want our streets to be safe. We want to make sure that there's no one hanging on our streets. We want a lot. And I think when the mayor walked into this job that was depicted as something glamorous and powerful, that he really didn't know how many cans had been kicked down the road. And when you kick a can down the road long enough, eventually you're going to hit a wall or a lake. And for our mayor, it has been the lake. There's so many things going on right now. I want to start really with the whole issue of crime. In some ways, I think we're a little unfair when we talk about crime. Because I do not believe a mayor, I don't care who he is, unless he has Superman on his chest and then maybe he's related to Batman, is going to be able to deal with all the social ills that have brought us to this moment. And so when I get back to the moral ground, you need to tell the people that. That you can't fix this problem overnight. I don't care who you hire as a superintendent. I don't care how many police officers you put on the street. There's something else going on here. And most of the things going on is going on behind closed doors and families. How do we get to that? How do we fix that? How do we provide the resources in the community to deal with the crime problem? So while a lot of people are looking at this as this is a terrible, terrible situation. The mayor has lost power and, you know, he's down and he's almost drowned. He's treading water. I got to tell you, the African-American community, for the most part, is looking like, now maybe we will get some of these issues dealt with. Now the mayor has to come to us in a real way. Not with just, you know, these fleeting promises, but he needs the support of people in the communities, especially in the African-American community. He needs that support. I saw that when I went to a memorial that the mayor had hosted for one of the beloved activists in the African-American community, Henry English. It was a wonderful event. It was a moving event. But it was very odd to have the mayor of the city of Chicago come out and host, not just speak, but actually host a memorial for someone that most people probably don't even know in the city, know his name or who that person was. He was there. He came in. People wanted to shake his hands. They were lined up to get pictures with him. Him and his wife walked in. They had a front seat. They were well received. There were no protesters. There was no one waving any flags. There was no one screaming. I think we kind of missed the fact that where are the protesters now? When we talk about whether the mayor is going to survive all of this, where are the protesters now? They're not outside his office. They're not marching down the street. They're not doing any of that. So I think that we underestimate the ability for the mayor to rise above some of these challenges that he's facing. The other thing that I think we need to talk about is that when the decisions were being made, like closing schools, while we think that this was so devastating, there were people in the community that understood why those schools had to be closed. That's how he got reelected. Not because people were, you know, sleeping, but because they understood this is one of the cans that got kicked down the road. Maybe now we can change things. And I think it's going to be the same with the police department. I don't expect anything to change dramatically overnight with that, because we're going to see more large settlements. If IPRA is going to do the job that IPRA said it's going to do and review some of these cases, we can expect the taxpayers to be on the hook for a lot more money. We can expect, I think, that there's going to have to be money spent in the communities. This is a good thing for the African-American community. It's bad how it happened. It's terrible that it was the Laquan McDonald case, that it took that for people to start paying attention. But now people are looking at these communities on the South and West Side and saying, you know, they need community centers. They need jobs. They need development. And what are African-American aldermen doing? They're going, yes, yes, yes. As one minister, the clergy, told me, that he doesn't kick the mayor when he's down, but he goes to the mayor's pockets. And that's exactly what's happening. To get what they want, they're willing to do that. So this is not all bad news, but I do say that the leadership issue is something that the mayor is going to have to work on. I don't know whether he'll ever get back to this, the place of being powerful again, but maybe that's a good type thing. Maybe now we need some more humility than arrogance, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Round of applause for... Mary, the late Mayor Washington had a phrase, sui generis. That's you, one of a kind. Ain't nobody talk like that, and I think it's tremendous for us to hear that. It's refreshing. Now, speaking of refreshing, Dan Milopoulos, you're up.
Okay.
Give him a round of applause.
Thanks. Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. There's a number of people in the room here, and you know who you are, who have helped me with various stories. I want to thank you. I know you can't all acknowledge that you know me. You give me a nod from across the room. You give me a wave. Maybe we did talk once. I understand that you got to live in this town. I don't take it personally, but I appreciate your help with all these stories. Before I focus entirely on the situation right now and how it's changed politically as well as in terms of political coverage, I think I'd like to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to go back to the relatively not so far away beginning of when I went to the City Hall press room in 2004 and was given the entirely unenviable task of competing against Fran Spielman for the Chicago Tribune. Does that still work? Okay. And when I got there, things were very different in politics. I think Fran and I would agree. At that point, it was 2004, early 2004, and hired truck story had just broken. But still, Mayor Daley was in complete command of this city. You could not get an alderman to say a cross word about him, on the record at least. You could not defeat an alderman who had his backing still, really. It was very, very rare. And he could punish those rare individuals who would cross him. He had patronage armies at his disposal. He had the business community on his side. And the unions, who have become very much a factor in the last few years, were really a non-entity in many ways, in the sense that they were, the city was flush and they were getting what they wanted. And so you didn't hear about the CTU or any other union supporting opposition to the mayor or to any of his loyal aldermen. And, you know, as for reporters, this was long before Donald Trump started bashing us to our faces, but, you know, Daley was a little bit ahead of his time, and very early, Fran remembers, I asked him a question that he didn't want to hear, and he responded by saying, knock, knock, nobody's home. So he may have had a point.
Those are the golden days. You're right.
I'll let you guys be the judge. But due in great part, I think, to the fiscal mismanagement that occurred during that time period, things are much different now, and life in the media business is also very different now, as Mayor Daley was also fond of pointing out. You know, what we have now is, I think, the only way to really, people will call it progressive, people will call it workers, and people will say it's cross-racial, and it probably is to some extent, but we're talking about a movement to a great extent from the left that looks at increasing the intake of revenues and taxes from people to pay for something that's no longer sustainable. And I think Rahm has suffered from that because I don't think he realized how difficult this job was that he was taking on. It's difficult to tell with him because you don't know when he's almost always on. But I do think that he did not betray any real understanding of how bad the financial situation was when he took over. And I think that affects everything else that we're talking about, whether it's schools, whether it's policing in terms of resources, although I think the policing issue is far more nuanced and complicated than just a money issue. But money affects everything in this situation right now. And I think that is the main thing that's working against him. I don't know what his opponents would do that he hasn't done. I think they've made something like six efforts to deal with the pension issue, and they've been blocked in the courts. I think they've done a decent job of reining in the operating expenditures, at least at City Hall, if not at CPS, and bringing them in line with the revenue streams that they're getting these days. But it's become a very, very difficult situation, and I don't think any of the solutions are really politically palatable. I wouldn't write them off. I think the next election is too far off. And I think we also have to look at the opposition. I think this is what I've tried to do. In the media game, there's been an emergence of a lot of, I think, activist journalists, for lack of a better term. I think they're free to do what they do. But my job, I feel, as a journalist, is to look at everyone, whether it's the mayor. I mean, the mayor's going to come in for more criticism, more scrutiny, because he is in power, and you always have to look at what they're doing when they have their hands on the levers of power. But I think at election time, at least, you have to look at the other candidates closely. And I've found in many cases, some of his opponents are not too eager to be scrutinized, and they expect the media to be on their side. And there's been an emergence of a sort of media that is on one side or the other. I don't know if it's a reflection of what's going on nationally, which is very polarized, and where we've had the emergence of news outlets that are identifiably on one extreme or the other. But I still feel that we in the media have to stay in the uncomfortable position of being equal opportunity in terms of who we criticize and who we investigate. I do two things, essentially. I write a political column once a week, and I'm also part of the small, but I think dynamic watchdog team. Fortunately, I don't have to compete with Fran anymore. I've been at the Sun-Times for the past 4 years. I think we both agree we'd rather be on the same team than against each other. Ultimately, I think if you read my column today, a certain former police superintendent suggested to me in these exact terms that I go away. But I was born here in Chicago, and I've been lucky enough to live my boyhood dream to be a reporter here for the last 17 years. And I appreciate all of you who help us to do that job. You guys can find my email at the top of the story online, at the bottom in the paper. You can find me on Twitter. And I'm always eager to hear your thoughts about what's going on in the politics of the city.
Okay. Round of applause for Dan. If you have questions, raise your hand. The crack staff is coming in right now as we speak to get the questions. And while they are gathering those questions, the moderator may have a question. And Dan, you brought up part of it, but it's an interesting part of it. Is there any logical, and all three jumped in, is there any logical opposition to the mayor? I mean, besides people applauding because they want to get rid of him, you got to replace somebody with somebody.
Are you talking about people who would run next time?
Or? Yeah, I mean, legitimate opposition, not just, you know, don't give me the progressives, because, you know, my definition of a progressive, that's a cowardly liberal. But
I think if you're talking about people who could run next time, and again, I say I don't think you will see Emanuel run for re-election, but I would say you have to start with Kurt Summers, who's terribly interested, the city treasurer who was appointed by Emanuel. I think you can't count out the possibility of Lisa Madigan maybe giving it a try, even though she has been the girl who cried wolf in the sense of running for, talking about running for things that she never ran for. Maybe Arne Duncan. Let's see. Who else would, maybe City Clerk Susana Mendoza, who's terribly ambitious and is running for, I believe, controller now. Possibly Tom Dart, again, a boy who cried wolf, who talks about running for things but hasn't done it other than for sheriff. Maybe Brendan Riley would try. Anybody else want to think about somebody?
I think the line would be very, very long, because if you begin, well, because if you look at it, if he's going to run again, he's going to have to run on a very, very bad record, and very, very difficult. That's a very difficult task. If he's perceived as weak, everybody's going to line up to get in the game.
But what if he doesn't run? That's what I think is going to happen. Then it's wide open, and who would you say?
Well, if he doesn't run, I think at the top of the list you'd have to put Toni Preckwinkle. There's no way. Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle. You have to put her at the top of the list.
Do you think she would want to? She took a pass last time. She could be mayor today.
Yeah, but, well, she wasn't ready today. She wasn't ready then. So maybe going forward, she would be ready. She may, if she's accomplished what she needed to accomplish on the Cook County Board, then I could see her running for mayor.
I think all the people that Fran mentioned and more could run if he doesn't run. I'm not entirely convinced that he won't run for a third term. I'm not, you know, excuse me. I just would like to know who's going to run against him, assuming that he does run.
I'm not assuming
really
that he'll
run. I
don't
see anyone that would jump out at me as being somebody that absolutely will run, except, you know, people who have run before. Chuy Garcia, maybe, again.
You know, but if it costs $24 million against Chuy, can you imagine what this would cost? Think about it.
All right, well, we settled that. luckily, February 29, 2019
is a few years away.
Long way off. I will hold back because we have so many great questions. Here we go. Frank Paul, by the way, we have those very expensive question forms. Only a few of you are using them. Mush, we got to make those in color or something. All right. I think they answered it, but we'll make it quick. Who are the top four or five leaders in Chicago today? Not just political. Give me your top three Chicagoans. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I go first. Top three Chicagoans. Look, the mayor is still the mayor. Toni Preckwinkle, although I don't think she had coattails until recently, obviously does have the ability to be a boss in her own right. Don't take that the wrong way. It's just this is how we roll here in Chicago. And the third one, you know, Rauner, I guess, is a Chicagoan now. I mean, among his 17 residences. So I'll count him. He's still a governor, although, you know, unimpressed to this point.
Mary, who would you say are the top three Chicago? Doesn't have to be political. Just kind of.
Well, you know, well, okay, I would go with the mayor, of course. I mean, you can't overlook his position, even though there are people that are opposed to him right now. I would always have to go with Toni Preckwinkle. I think she has gotten a lot of exposure. The fact that she was able to support Kim Fox and get her elected, and when people didn't even know her name starting out, I think that is huge. And I also think that Father Michael Flager is very, very, very much a leader. His hands are all over the city of Chicago. I don't think there's any meeting that the mayor has ever had that he didn't call Michael Flager to the table.
Yeah, I would say obviously the mayor, even in a diminished situation, obviously Toni Preckwinkle coming off her big victory. And, well, I would say, let's say Eddie Johnson, because he's on the line now to deliver here with the Justice Department breathing down Chicago's neck and going to probably recommend things that are extremely costly. And Chicago is going to be under the gun to come up with the money. And he has got a huge job ahead of him in terms of rebuilding that trust, getting the police officers to stop being reactive and be proactive again so we can get a handle on some of this crime.
Okay, well, moderator holding back again. Okay, Catherine Konopozic. Let me just call you Kathy, retired principal, CPS. All right, we got to shorten that name. Great, like some of us haven't had our name shortened. Latest report of millionaires, especially African Americans, leaving the city. This seems due to today's topic. Who can run against them? We did that already. Also, what do these things? Well, the fact that millionaires are leaving the city. But Lawrence Masal is still living here, so that's okay. Do we read anything into that? Forget about who can. Enough with running against the mayor. The fact that we have people leaving the city with money. To me, that's a bad thing. Any comment on that? That article was in your paper, wasn't it? About the
I think it was in Crane's. I didn't look at it closely. I'd have to look at it. It's counterintuitive to me when I look out the window of the Sun Times and there are high rises going up everywhere. There's a lot of construction going on there. People paying $4,000 a month for two bedroom apartments down here in the Aqua Building and other new buildings. And I think that. The bigger problem, you know, again, I'd have to look at the numbers much more analytically, but I think a big problem across racial lines, white, black, and Hispanic, is the middle class that's being hollowed out. And I think that's what the numbers would show you over time. And that's true across all racial groups. You just have to go to a south suburb like Matteson. I think there was one block I looked at in Matteson with 10 houses, and we looked at the deeds when these new houses were bought, big houses. 2,500 square feet. I think, you know, six or seven out of the 10, their previous address was in the city of Chicago. And I think that's been, there was a good story recently by a friend at the Chicago Tribune. We've done stories over the years about it, and a lot of people have talked about it, but I still think it's something that's misunderstood, because you look at the reaction when people do write about it, and I think a lot of people don't really appreciate the depth of impact that's had on the city.
Okay. The tax burden, even though property taxes have been relatively modest in Chicago compared to the suburbs, it's the game is changing. And you had the $588 million increase that the mayor pushed through, which is only the beginning, because he's going to have to raise $170 more for the schools. Hopefully that'll be the end of that if he gets help from Springfield. And then what is he going to do for municipal and laborers? So the taxes are just up and up and up and up. And maybe people are upset about that, even though the very rich can afford it.
I think people are really upset about the crime. You know, even if you don't live in a neighborhood where people are getting killed daily or shot daily, you're now seeing crime that used to be described as being on the South Side or being on the West Side or being on Inglewood or being in South Shore. You're seeing those same crimes now being reported in places like Lincoln Park and places up on the North Side. That's really scary for a lot of people. So while people are concentrated in the high rises downtown, folks who are living in the outskirts, whether it's further north or whether it's South Loop, they have other options. And so I think it just goes beyond the tax burden. I think it's the crime. If the city cannot get this crime problem turned around, people are going to flee elsewhere, because everyone wants to raise their families in safety.
And the schools, too, we forgot.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Same thing with schools.
Common denominator is money. That's why it's so much easier to be Santa Claus than Scrooge when you could promise things and not have to worry about how you're going to pay for them. Or more importantly, who's going to pay for them? Mm-hmm. You know, pretty soon, you know, I will stop. I could go on. It's not my job. Father, could you stop me before I start attacking? Here we go. Question from Chester Kropodowski. Jay, we need more Irish to ask these questions. They're shorter names. It's a very good question. Oh, I don't want to get in trouble. Okay, I take that back. I'm a retired city person, retired since 1998. Yeah, pretty good for you. Any chance I might end up losing my retirement benefits, including health benefits, as a result of the dollar problems?
I don't think, the Supreme Court made it very clear this is an obligation of the city. It cannot be altered. It was a promise made to these employees who paid into the funds faithfully. The city skipped payments. That's not their problem. And the city must honor this promise, come hell or high water, really. And it is high water, you're right. And it's not the pension fund's problem or their obligation. It is the city's obligation. So, no, I don't see any chance. The city had hinted during the court fight that they would walk away from these funds and just let them go belly up at some point if it came to that. That is not a possibility now. So I don't see any chance that this person won't find a way or Chester won't get his pension. City's going to have to find a way to pay for it.
There he is. All right. Showing incredible restraint. Diane Shapiro, where are you? Where?
Right here at the corner.
All right, Diane. I don't understand your question, but can you say it in two sentences? All right, that's the Cloward-Piven strategy. The research arm of the City Club will look into that. All right. I don't think you guys are going to... No, I mean, all right.
The only thing I'll say is, do you think that the financial situation... I don't want to get into the debate across the entire length of the room, but I mean, the financial situation is dire. This is what they've explained in SEC filings. If that's, you know, broke on purpose, I don't know what the intentions were over the many years that the situation is built up to get to this point, but I think it's indisputable that it's bad right now, and I don't think they're lying in their SEC filings and their bond disclosures, unless they want to go to jail for that too.
All right,
sure.
Raymond Wall, Chicago Teachers Pension Fund. Where are you? There he is, the clapper. All right. How is your work impacted by a mayor that sends out 8 to 12 media releases every day? Do you get intimidated by 8 to 12 media releases?
No, you're like a kid who hears from his parents too often. You ignore them. That's really where it's at. You have to pick your battles, pick your moments, and if you don't, then you start getting ignored. This conveyor belt of press releases is not working.
And it's not just the mayor, by the way. I mean, I get so many emails from the press releases from the White House. I'm like, duh, I mean, why do they keep sending me all these? I'm not in Washington. But you get at least 10, 15 a day.
Well, I have the luxury of not being on the beat anymore and being an investigative reporter, columnist, to say that my rule is I don't really cover press releases. I'm trying to look for something unique in case any of you want to know how to pitch me. And the other thing is don't CC everyone. I recently got an email that said, "Dear Cass and Mihalopoulos, signed whistleblower." I don't know if it was a group email to Greek American columnists. I don't think he got it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to waste my time.
All right. Well, we have one about from Rachel. That question's been asked about Rahm and his political thing. Everyone wants to talk about politics. What a surprise. The city's going down the tubes financially, and all you want to do is talk about the next election. Of course, it's a lot more fun talking about the next election than talking about the reality that we have no money. This question breaks the record for the length, so we don't ask that. All right, here comes the last question. Steve Capsalis. Where are you, Steve? Right there. That section right there is very literary. Every question comes from there. The American Institute of Chemical Engineers. This may be the first question we ever had from them. How come difficult questions are not asked of them? Oh, boy, you're asking a hell of a question. Here we go. How come difficult questions are not asked of the mayor and for the reporters to be persistent? Are you reporters afraid?
Oh, absolutely not. The problem with Mayor Emanuel is that he limits his media availabilities to maybe one a week, and then when he does them, he limits the questions to such a few that and there's no opportunity for follow-up. He makes you raise your hand. He calls on you. If he's angry with you, he won't call on you. There is no opportunity to follow up. Even if you try, he goes to someone else. And he does only selected one-on-one interviews with people he feels comfortable with. So it is difficult with a controlling politician like Mayor Emanuel to really do the kind of follow-up that you have. When you have him one-on-one, you can do that, and you can stop the filibustering, because he will answer the question whatever way he wants to, whatever the question is. Do you have any questions for my answers? That's what he sometimes says. And the reason is because he pushes play on this particular topic, and it doesn't matter what the question is. Rarely does he answer a question. So it's kind of difficult. It's not that we're not trying. Believe me, it's not.
Well, I think that, quite frankly, the Laquan McDonald story really exposed a problem with Chicago journalists, whether we want to admit it or not. With mainstream journalists, we miss the story. And we miss the story because number one, I think we tend to be pack rats. We just follow in a pack. And if one person is reporting a story, it seems like all the journalists are reporting that same story. The Laquan McDonald story did not rise to the surface simply because he was poor. He was a ward of the state. He was initially identified as being a person, carrying a weapon. And we missed it. And I think because we missed it, we are now under as much scrutiny as the mayor is under. You know, that was a major disappointment for the city of Chicago. And so you have every right to question whether or not we are on our job, whether we're up to the task. I said when the story broke that, well, we've got to be careful calling on the mayor to resign. Somebody's going to call on us to resign because it was just that important. So I think that we all learn lessons from that. We are much more diligent. We're more likely to bulldog a story. We're more likely to FOIA and to ask the really tough questions and not accept these weak answers that the mayor gives simply because we blew it on that story.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. But I do think that it was more errors of judgment, news judgment. But I'll just say this. I mean, if the question is, are we afraid? Just look at the entirety of the body of our work. A lot of people look at one story and try to extrapolate from that story what someone's biases may be. Yes, we do all have opinions. I'm lucky to be allowed to share mine once a week in the paper. But sometimes we'll share them on Twitter as well and other places like that. But for the most part, you know, we don't work for Maram. We don't work for Daily. And by the same token, we don't work for their critics. So please remember that.
Okay. The leader's coming up with a question. You have real power. You have the president of the organization. Hand deliver your question. Well, we were going to end on a question of why aren't we teaching cursive in school, which I thought, Bruce Handler, it's a hell of a good question, but we have to go past that because most of the young people don't write anything. So here we go. The Honorable Lawrence Massell, Civic Federation. Good question, Lawrence. We'll give you 1 minute to answer each, and then we got to get out of here. People are leaving. They have very important businesses. They got to make money so they can pay our taxes to all the people on pensions. If you were mayor, how would you announce and get implemented the enormous tax increase that many people in this room advocate for addressing Chicago's budget and pension crisis? If you were mayor, how would you announce and get implemented? And you can't use the answer, I would leak it to one of you. That's the only one you can't use. It's a great question. Stump the panel. If there was a prize, you get it, Lawrence.
How would you announce, not what you would do?
Whatever you want to do to sell this enormous.
How would you sell the package?
Well, by being honest with people. What a novelty. Right. I mean, you've got to get people to understand that these problems have been deferred and denied for too long. I think Mayor Emanuel has made a major mistake in not, I mean, he doesn't utter the word daily, and yet he should utter the word daily, because Daily had a pension commission, and they came back with recommendations, and he told them, don't ever talk about a tax increase before the election. So this was addressed, and yet it was not addressed. So he needs to really sell the fact that he inherited a mud sandwich, basically, and he's got to deal with it. He's got to chomp down on it. And so you need to tell people what it was, how these problems were kicked down the road. It's not enough to just say, well, you know, and use slogans like that. You've got to tell people about that this has been a problem that, I mean, Daley at one point used the pension money to cut taxes, and instead of making a pension payment to a fund that at that time that was fully funded. So that's a crazy thing to do. I think at a certain point he's going to have to find another source of revenue, not just the property taxes. 588 already, another 170 for the teachers. Who knows what else for the municipal and laborers. He'll probably do a telephone tax for that. I think the city needs a new source of revenue, maybe a service tax. Maybe a city income tax, he'll try to avoid that. Maybe a commuter tax, maybe a congestion fee, something new. But he's got to bring people along, and that's not been his strong point.
Mary.
Treat a crisis like a crisis. It is a crisis. It's a crisis in leadership. It's a crisis in how this city is being run. It's a crisis when it comes to the pensions. Treat it like a crisis. That's the only way to regain the moral high ground. And I think if he does that and he's honest about it, you know, Chicagoans aren't dummies. They understand. They can look around and find out we're in trouble here. If you deliver the truth, let the chips fall where they may, then I think you have a good opportunity of turning it around.
Dan.
I mean, we're really talking about two things here, right? We're talking about the solutions, which Lawrence likes and assumes that the rest of the room is with him. He may be right, but I'm not sure that the general public is going to find those very palatable or appealing in any way. And then you've got the second issue is just the problem of how we've gotten here. And right now, Rahm needs to figure out a way, because people are conflating both of those issues into Rahm right now. And maybe that's inevitable because he's the mayor. He has been there 5 years. Again, I don't think he fully understood the enormity of the problem at the beginning, but he certainly didn't build a case for what needs to be done, because I think he was afraid to get blamed for the way things are. And he is being blamed for the way things are, fairly or unfairly. But every day that passes since the day that he took office on May 17th, 2011, it becomes harder for him to distance himself from the way that we got here. And we may understand it. We may look at bond documents and see how this problem built up over the years, or read these excellent Civic Federation reports that inform so much of our understanding of this issue. But I'm not sure that the general public does. And I think right now he is both, people look at him and say, well, all these things are happening now that Rahm's in there.
All right. How about a big round of applause? This is really informative.